You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined by Paul Zeiss for our Steelers post-game show here on postgazette.com, the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, various other social networks. After a 31-17 Steelers loss to the Buffalo Bills in the wild card round of the playoff, Paul, I think we saw it coming. I think Buffalo was clearly the better team. 10-point favorites rarely win. Even though, you know, as the seventh seed, I think Green Bay looked pretty good last night. This was always going to be a tough one to win. But grading on that scale, Paul, what did you think of the result tonight?
I think what's really disturbing, Adam, about this whole thing, yet another playoff game, they're down 21-0 before you even really get started. I mean, that you can't come back and win. You know, I guess the Bills did it to the Oilers back in the day. But that is the most disturbing thing. It's not that they lost the game. It's that this is what I think I did the math, Adam. They've been down at halftime in their last five playoff games, 122-40. You can't win in the playoffs doing that. After that, I don't care what happens. You know, okay, Deontay Johnson made some nice plays and here and there and the other. You're down 21-0. And really, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons why. It'd be easy if you say, well, you know, Mason Rudolph was terrible. Well, he didn't fumble the ball like, you know, George Pickens did, right? He missed a couple of throws early. Absolutely. He did, but then he turns the ball over in the end zone. But he didn't allow Josh Allen to run 65 yards down the middle, basically on a quarterback draw. He didn't allow the Bills to go 85 yards on their first drive and score a touchdown. It looked like they weren't even there. He didn't allow one play after the fumble by, was it Pickens or whoever it was? I think it was Pickens that fumbled. The next play, they score 25-yard touchdowns or whatever it was. At the end of the day, it's not just one thing or one player. That's the problem. And I think that's the thing about this whole thing with Mike Tomlin. What planet, okay, what planet would any other coach be allowed to hang around after five consecutive blowout playoff losses and 7 years in a row without a playoff win? I don't want to hear about never had a winning, losing season and all that crap, because to me, none of that really matters. What matters is what you do in the playoffs, and it's not that they've lost a few games. I mean, they've never really been in any of these games, have they, Adam? Was there ever a point in this game where you thought, boy, they're in this game? Even when they cut it to, what, 21-14 or whatever it was, I still never kind of felt like, wow, they're really in this game.
Well, I will say this, Paul. I thought they settled in reasonably well. I think if you start the game at halftime and you play from there and the way they played, I think they were in this game. They made some mistakes on that last, with that. Well, it wasn't the last drive, the last touchdown for Buffalo, but that last, you know, kind of backbreaking drive with about 5 minutes left. I thought they were in the game from the point where they started making all the mistakes. It's just, to your point, Paul, it felt kind of like that Browns game a couple of years ago where you're snapping the ball over people's heads and you're putting yourself so far behind the eight ball that even the good things that happen after that point don't really matter. And I think that's the big struggle for them right now is, you know, you keep putting yourself behind the eight ball and maybe you could have played with that team if you don't do that tonight.
Right. They made mistakes. They fumbled. They had some penalties, right? They had some breakdowns on defense. Again, if it's 1 year where that happens, okay, but this is now five playoff games in a row where you're down 21-0 or 28-0 or 28-7 or whatever. You know, it just, it's, it doesn't, you can't win playoff. Listen, in the playoffs, you're playing the best teams. You're playing good teams. So if you get behind like the Steelers have in all these playoff games, it just, it doesn't work anymore. It really doesn't work. And so I'm not going to overreact to one game and say, oh, well, but this is now five games and this is now seven seasons without a playoff win. It's at some point, the definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over and over again and expecting different results. So to me, I mean, we can break down the game and we will here in a few minutes, right? But at the end of the day, the problem that has existed, I think, for the last five, six, 7 years continues to exist. And that is they get into the playoffs against good teams and they're blown out of the building before the game even starts.
Yeah, Paul, I do want to talk about some individual moments of this game. Before we get too far into it, I want to thank our primary sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Steelers postgame show this year on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, I want to talk about some individual efforts because, you know, we could talk about Mike Tomlin all night, but there were plays that were there to be made tonight. I think of that Peterson sack that he misses in the first half. I think of the missed tackle by DeMonte KZ on that long Josh Allen touchdown. I think of Minkah Fitzpatrick blowing that touchdown. You know, he had a chance to stop the touchdown, then Shakir runs, whatever it was, 30 yards into the end zone for effectively the game-ending touchdown. There were a lot of the plays like that on defense tonight, Paul. For as much as you can talk about coaching, they put you in a position to make stops, and you don't make those stops. What is the deal with this defense and how many more years are the Steelers going to go into playoff games relying on them to like turn back the clock to 2005 and just shut teams down when we've seen that this core group of guys just when the lights are brightest, they just don't make the plays.
Well, I mean, that would speak to the fact that they don't have good enough players. I mean, they're just not good enough. I mean, you hope that some of these younger guys are getting better, but they've got a lot of guys that just are sort of okay. I think the defense obviously misses TJ Watt. You put him in the game, but you know, again, five playoff games in a row. Now there's always some excuse if you really want to keep finding excuses. And the reality is at some point you've got to make plays, but some guys like, if correct me if I'm wrong, but was it Patrick Peterson that maybe had a chance to make that sack? He's a guy that's done, you know, I mean, what they have in the middle, it's just not good enough. You know, it's frustrating as heck. They need better players in certain spots. I think, you know, they've got some good young players, but they're not good enough yet. So, if you can, you know, continue, on here, Adam, I got to bust out for a couple of minutes. I'll be right back. Okay.
Yes. Paul's going to take off for a couple of seconds. I'm just going to continue you know, mentioned that I think that I really put a lot of blame on the players for this one. Tomlin, you know, he put them in good position tonight. And I think what you saw was, you know, guys that weren't up to the individual standards to win games. And I think that was an unfortunate aspect. I thought Mason Rudolph rebounded early, settled in. I thought a lot of these guys settled in. I thought the running game settled in pretty well. You had, you know, some good runs. You had some good dump off passes to Jaylen Warren. They kind of got into their offense a little bit. You know, it was just a little bit, you know, too little too late. I mean, you look at the stats here, 22 of 39 for Mason Rudolph. He missed too many throws early. I thought averages 5.9 yards per attempt. That's not good enough. Tony Romo was mentioning on the broadcast, he thought that they could have taken some more deep shots. That was something I'd agreed with. But you know, that's a theme we've come back to all season as well. Sometimes they're not there. And, you know, it's hard for us at home to kind of know without the all 22 cam, without being able to see the whole field, you know, what's available and what's not. We'll keep going down the stats here a little bit. Jaylen Warren, 8 carries for 38 yards. That's 4.8 yards per attempt. Pretty decent. Najee Harris was not quite as good. 12 carries for 37 yards. You finish with 106 yards on the ground, though. Average 4.6 per attempt. You know, so the ground game was there. They settled in all right. You get into the receiving game. Pat Freiermuth has a nice game. 5 catches, 76 yards, averages 15.2 yards a catch. Finally get him involved. It's been an up and down season for him. You think about that game at Cincinnati where he pretty much dominated the Bengals, was a big part of the reason that they were able to win that game. George Pickens, 5 catches, 50 yards, but has the huge fumble tonight. Man, what a season for him. And I think that's really a down note for him to end the year on. That fumble is pretty much where, you know, what you're going to remember, despite those late heroics in those last three games to help get them to this point. You can't have those mistakes. It's a cold night. And I think that played more of a role in this game than, you know, I think a lot of Steelers fans were hoping. There was a lot of talk about, hey, if the Steelers can get into a blizzard type of game in Buffalo, maybe they can dominate Buffalo on the ground a little bit, dominate them in the trenches, muck it up, take away a lot of the advantages that Josh Allen brings to the equation. You know, I think tonight kind of showed that maybe there wasn't a whole lot of validity to that, because I think that you can tie a lot of those fumbles to the fact that the Steelers didn't seem prepared to play in that cold, in that weather. Obviously, Pat Freiermuth's got wiped out the fumble forward, but man, I thought that looked like a fumble and a recovery by Buffalo. I think they showed the one angle where it might have bounced off of Freiermuth's helmet, but then I saw another where it didn't look like it got anywhere close to him. You know, it looked like a fumble, and so you know that should have been another mistake that was added to the pile. Keep going down the stats here. Deontay Johnson, 4 catches, 48 yards, kind of a quiet night other than the touchdown. And then, you know, pretty much into bit players. It was nice to see Calvin Austin after the season he's had score a touchdown. I was surprised that the year he had and that he wasn't more involved. There were a lot of weeks Paul and I were on these types of shows talking about, you know, he was supposed to be a big piece of this offense, and there were long stretches where you didn't see him this season. You know, but a nice time for him to get involved. Allen Robinson with a couple of catches. Presley Harvin, man, what a rough night for the punter. I'm scrolling down here on the stats. 4 punts, average of 38.5 yards, a long of 51. If you took that out, I think he was averaging like 32, 33 yards a punt. Thankfully, the Steelers, he didn't see the field much in the second half because the offense was, you know, scoring or threatening to score. So you kind of limit the damage there. I'll be very curious to see what they do with him, though. Going into next season, considering you know he had a lot of up and down games. There were days you saw him and you saw the Ray Guy Award winner, right? And you saw the guy that could have been the punter of the future. And then there were games that he just shanked them a lot. And I think, you know, they're going to have to do more this offseason than just bring in some guy off the road to compete with him. I think they're going to have to look for some serious options to either make him compete for that job next year, or possibly replace him, because that field position early in the game was a big part of the reason, you know, Paul and I are talking about that they looked unprepared. Well, the fields were shorter than they should have been for the Bills, and Presley Harvin, you know, was a big part of that. Also, I thought the clock management was very suspect at the end of the first half. About, 50 seconds left, you make a tackle on first down. You have all three timeouts left. Buffalo doesn't have a punter. Or at least, you know, at that time, I don't think he would have been ready to go into the game and kick. I think Jay Feely mentioned on the broadcast that he went in at halftime, maybe got an injection that helped him, you know, punt in the second half, comes back in. But at the time, they showed the Buffalo sideline. It looked like a little bit of chaos to me. It did not look like they had a plan before the first half whistle. So, but Mike Tomlin lets the clock run to 2 seconds. I think Paul's back here. Hey, Paul.
Yeah, I'm back for a few more minutes. I think it's ridiculous. Adam, you were just speaking about the other thing. Why let it run down and then 2 seconds left, you call a timeout? I didn't understand that at all. I didn't understand what the goal of that was. You just had some...
I felt like he figured out, right, that as we did, Paul, and remembered that the punter was injured. The broadcast was saying it was almost like he was figuring it out in real time. With
right,
the rest.
But Adam, my point is, why not use your timeouts earlier than that?
I don't think he remembered that the punter was injured, Paul, to be honest with you. That was my read, is that he
right,
didn't
but
think
you
the punter
just
was
scored
injured.
A touchdown. You kind of got into the game a little bit. You just had some momentum. If you get a stop, get the ball back for your defense, for your offense, maybe they go down, even if they get a field goal. Now all of a sudden you're back in the game for real.
I agree. They should have been They should have been calling those timeouts, but I don't think I think he was content to get into halftime down 14, not realizing that they probably would have gotten decent field position given the punting situation the Buffalo had.
The motto of the last 3 weeks, though, Adam, has been don't live in your fears, right? We're going to, what is it, scared money don't lose, or scared money don't make money and all that other stuff, right? That's been the motto of the last X amount of weeks. Okay, so if that's the case, then why in that situation there are you not calling timeouts immediately to try and get the ball back? Because you're scared that Buffalo might go down the field and score if you give them more time. That's really what it comes down to. The Steelers were just as content to go into the locker room as the Bills. The difference is the Bills had a 14-point lead. So yeah. I don't understand how you can go scared money, don't make money, and all that other stuff, right? And then for 3 weeks it works, and that's your motto. And then at the end of the day, now all of a sudden you're talking about how, well, we're just going to let the clock run out. You should have been trying to get the ball back regardless of what it was happening with the punter.
Yeah, there was not enough aggression there. Paul, I know we're going to lose you here in a little bit. I want to ask you about the Mason Rudolph, Kenny Pickett situation going into next season. You and I have talked a lot about it. We've always done it in terms of if Mason Rudolph does this, if the Steelers do this, blah, the season's over. Mason Rudolph was what he was tonight. Not his best effort. Where do you see that situation now? Has anything changed in your mind in terms of Kenny Pickett being the guy going into next season? Or did you see enough from him tonight to say, hey, maybe he needs to come in and compete?
Well, as you know, I've said all along, I think that Kenny Pickett will be the starter, that Mason Rudolph will be wearing a different uniform. Nothing I saw tonight changes that, Adam. In fact, tonight probably solidifies the fact that the Steelers will be able to walk away from Mason Rudolph and say, you know what? I played two bad defenses, all yada, 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 this and that and the other thing, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. So I don't think for one second, I really don't think for one second that there's going to be any consideration of bringing back Mason Rudolph at the end of this.
Yeah, I'll be curious because you do – listen, I mean, if you're talking about what you do at quarterback, these are the games that you prove that you belong, right, and that you separate yourself from Kenny Pickett. You go out and you win playoff games, and at the very least you put up a better fight than I think Mason Rudolph did tonight. No disrespect to what he did in the second half of the season, but if you're going to be the future of the franchise at quarterback, this is the type of game that you have to play better than you did tonight. And just because you were good enough to keep them in the game does not mean you did put the exclamation point on your season that you needed to prove that you belong here, need to stay here and get a chance to unseat Kenny Pickett. Paul, I also want to get your thoughts on a couple of those calls that were pretty curious on Miles Jack on that last touchdown drive by Buffalo. First, there was the holding call where the ball was nowhere near catchable. I thought that was a BS call. I guess you can call holding, but it's one of those criticisms I've seen from a lot of people, Paul, of the NFL guys. They love to call these procedural penalties that have no impact on the play.
Well, the thing about that is if you call holding there, Adam, it's when the ball's in the air, right? It's actually holding is before the ball's in the air, actually. I'm sorry. Before the ball's in the air. So they're not looking at the throw there if they're calling defensive holding. Now, if they call pass interference, that would have been a terrible call. But when you call defensive holding, it's before the ball's in the air is when you're calling the defensive holding. So the throw there really has nothing to do with, what actually the call was. And then the next call was that slide, right, where somebody hit Josh Allen when he was on the ground. That's an easiest call. That's the easiest call in the book to make. I don't know if I like it or don't like it, but it's a textbook call.
Yeah, I agree with that, Paul. Should that have been a penalty on Miles Jack in terms of should that be in the rule book? I think that's debatable. I understand why people hate that it is a penalty, but if you're going to call penalties for plays like that, and they're going to be, like you said, the textbook example, I don't know how you don't make the penalty call there. And that doesn't mean that we like it, but I think that was by the letter of the law what it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it is letter of the law. That's the key. I mean, to me, it's an easy call. I had, both of those calls, because of the way that they were called, I really didn't have that much of a problem with it. There was a couple of holds that were missed. But you know what, Adam? They're going to miss calls. From time to time, they're going to miss calls. This game was lost early in the first part of the game when we, you know, when the Steelers didn't capitalize early and then the Bills got up 14-21-0. You're not coming back 21-0 against a good team. You're just not.
How big of a difference does TJ Watt make in this game if he's in, Paul? We had a couple people in the comments pointed out. We should mention, yeah, he was not in this game. I don't know how much of a difference he makes. Just because I think they were saying in the lead up to this game that Josh Allen was one of the least sacked quarterbacks in the league. The Steelers still get to him a couple of times. I thought Alex Highsmith had a pretty decent game. In the end, I don't know how much of a difference TJ Watt makes given how things played out.
Yeah, you know, I think that he makes a difference, but I don't think he changes the outcome of the game. You know, he doesn't. I got to join you. I'll join you back in a minute.
Yeah, Paul will be back in a minute. I'll just say my piece on that. I think just given the way the Bills play offense, they get the ball out quick. They protect Josh Allen well. They have not given up many sacks all season. You know, maybe you make – I think the difference he could have made is blow up a play, do some of that stuff that we saw in that Browns game at Acrisure Stadium earlier this season where, you know, you make the big plays to keep the team in the game. I think short of that, I don't think another sack or two – changes the outcome a whole lot here. I think the Bills were just better than the Steelers in the trenches tonight. So, yeah, tough assignment for him. I think to me, and I'm going to ask, we're going to have Paul come back shortly, and then Christopher Carter will be joining us in a little bit. One of the questions I want to talk about is Minkah Fitzpatrick and what should his long-term future be as part of this defense? Safety is not a place that a lot of teams in the NFL invest a lot of money. We've seen the Steelers kind of patch that position up during his injury absence, right, with Eric Rowe, Patrick Peterson even stepping in there at times. They've proven that they can play without Minkah Fitzpatrick over long periods of time. You bring him back this week, and I think, you know, a lot of people talk to me, you pay these guys to make the big plays in these games. And not only does he not make the big plays, but he's a liability on some of the long plays that determine the game. You know, I know he's under contract, recently signed to an extension, but you know, in terms of his long term in Pittsburgh, this is the kind of game that I think casts some questions over, you know, what his long term should be here. While we're waiting for Paul to come back, just want to thank a couple more of our sponsors, Goldberg, Persky & White. If you were diagnosed with mesothelioma or lung cancer, call your local attorneys at Goldberg, Persky & White. For over 40 years, their firm has represented thousands of lung cancer and mesothelioma victims. Call 1-800-COMPLEX or visit gpwlaw.com for a free consultation. Also want to thank Propel Schools. Propel's 13 public charter schools in Allegheny County build a solid academic foundation for lifelong learning and offer more personalized instruction at every level during your child's kindergarten through 12th grade education journey. Give your children the quality education they deserve. Learn more and apply to Propel Schools by visiting propelschools.org. Folks, a couple other topics I have written down here. Let me go down my shot sheet. Getting into the year for George Pickens, I wonder what he's going to say after the game. I wonder what the reaction is going to be. He Mason Rudolph, and this is where I think the conversation gets interesting about what you do at quarterback next season. I thought Mason Rudolph kept him much more engaged in some of these games this season, where he'd get frustrated with Kenny Pickett and you'd have all kind of frustration on the sidelines. It felt like he knew Mason Rudolph could get him the ball, and he felt a lot better. But then on the sideline tonight, you saw the frustration. He thought he was interfered with on one of those late throws. Doesn't make a difference in the outcome, but you saw some of the same stuff on the sideline, but he didn't seem frustrated with teammates. He seemed frustrated with the officials, which, you know, I think, you know, is it a sign of progress, a sign of maturity from him? Maybe so, I think, but I'd be very curious to see how he handles this loss and his level of accountability for that fumble. Going down the line here, I'm curious to hear what you guys in the comments have to say about the hit on Joey Porter that apparently knocked him out with a concussion or concussion-like symptoms. Connor McGovern from the Bills comes from behind and kind of smushes Joey Porter's head. No penalty on that, and Joey Porter's left out of the game. But there has been, you know, some talk of whether that was a dirty hit. I thought it was a little bit dirty from behind. And listen, you know, Connor McGovern's a Penn State guy. I went to Penn State, not trying to slander anybody, but I thought that was a pretty dirty play and probably should have been flagged. especially considering some of the calls they made in this game. I thought it was a bad game for these officials. You know, between the Freiermuth fumble that I thought should have gone the other way on the Steelers, and the Miles Jack penalty, they just didn't seem to know what they were doing out there. Just kind of they conferred for like 5 minutes. The official, you know, the Highmark Stadium crowd's booing them loudly. I think all of us at home were all screaming at our sets. That's not a catchable ball. It's not a catchable ball. But it was better than making a 23-yard interference call on Miles Jack. For listen, the ball was 10 yards out of bounds. There was no way the guy was catching that pass. So I listen, if you're going to correct the call, it was at least better that they didn't call pass interference. Let's go down the stats here a little bit more. Minkah Fitzpatrick ends up with 10 tackles, leads the team in tackles. But, you know, I think some questions about the way he played tonight. Eric Rowe, though, I'm going to be very curious to see what they do with him next season. We got Chris Dell, sports editor, joining us. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, Adam, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Hey, man, I've been holding up by myself here. Give me your thoughts on this game.
Oh, man, you know, it's unfortunate, obviously, with slow start. I thought that really the game changer was the interception in the red zone. I'm not sure if you guys how much you've covered that, of that so far, but to me, that was the turning point. You know, that was the chance the Steelers to cut it to 7 points there in the beginning. I was a little surprised that they went away from the run game as early as they did. You know, Jaylen Warren even was running the ball pretty well. I thought maybe they should have stuck to that just a little bit longer. Seems like that was kind of the Steeler way in the cold weather type of situations that they found themselves in tonight. But unfortunately, that, you know, you look at that one play there, that's a 7 point, two possession possible swing. And I think overall, you know, they did what they needed to do in the second half, but putting themselves in that two touchdown hole early was just too much to overcome in the end.
Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the more controversial elements of this game, specifically, you know, the way the defense played tonight. I was talking about Minkah Fitzpatrick a little bit before you hopped on here. Rough night for him. I mean, misses that tackle on that last Shakir touchdown. A lot of people on social media were dogging him for not, you know, running out that other long touchdown play. What did you think of the way he played tonight, and whether he was up to the standard of a guy who makes as much money as he does for this defense?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, he's had kind of a rough season overall. I think when you look at his efficiency metrics from the beginning of the season, some people have pointed to the fact that the Steelers defense as a whole has played better without him this year. And obviously he's a big name, like you said, locker room leader, I guess, to this point as well. But the real issue here is not having T.J. Watt. And I think that the fact that you could say, yeah, Fitzpatrick has paid this much, but he's not that X factor on the field that matches up with his salary. So, again, like, there were those misplays. At the end of the day, he leads the team with 10 tackles, but it's a little misleading when you look at the tackle department there. I thought the coverage could have been a lot better in certain areas and scenarios. Obviously, them losing Joey Porter Jr. a little bit late to the end obviously affected things too. But I think it's a lot. Most Steelers fans know at this point that they're not looking for Fitzpatrick to be the difference maker at this point. And that's unfortunate given his contract. And that's kind of how it played out.
That's what I was going to hop in and say. Like, he's being paid to be a difference maker, yeah. Right? And safety is one of the positions that you invest the least in roster building across the NFL. And we saw at times with the guys that were able to step in, Eric Rowe, Patrick Peterson, you know, and they got decent safety play without Fitzpatrick. How long can you justify paying a safety that way if he's not going to at least not be a liability in a game like this the way he was tonight? I think it's one thing if he's not, you know, because, you know, turnovers are hard to generate, right? If it was easy to do, a lot more guys would do it. I don't hold it against them. They didn't necessarily make a game-breaking play tonight, but you got to get more than that, I think.
Yeah, I think look at the bright side. I thought there were some positives out of the defense overall. You mentioned Rowe. He was impressive on multiple occasions tonight. I thought Porter, for the most part, played pretty well. I thought that even on the inside, Cam Hayward, the defensive line, we saw Alex Highsmith make a couple plays there too. I thought they got decent pressure on Josh Allen. Yeah, there was a couple of missed tackles on Allen, but you know, you'd be more disappointed if that was against a different quarterback. That's kind of what you get with Josh Allen. He's just so big, so physically talented that he's going to break those type of tackles and make those long gains, especially with that type of weather. I mean, that's the last guy in the field I want to tackle out of those two teams in this situation with the weather being so cold. But I was really impressed by Landon Roberts on a few occasions. I mean, that one pass deflection he had, going towards the intermediate parts of the field that saved them a touchdown there. Thought that was a really impressive play. So I thought the defense did play well. You know, how much would T.J. Watt have been a factor? I know you say, you know, you say often in the betting community that only quarterbacks really move the line. I think in this situation, T.J. Watt's one of those few defenders in the league where he could affect the line as total of maybe, you know, 3 to 6 points or more, given the impact in a playoff game like this. And they sorely missed him tonight. So it's interesting to see where the franchise goes after this into the summer, right? Regardless of the coaching situation, because Mason Rudolph played okay, but I don't know if he really played enough, well enough to really give him that long leash heading into the off season. So that's kind of one of the big question marks going into the summer for sure.
Christopher Carter joining us. Chris, give me your thoughts on this game. I'll just let you run on what you saw in the big picture here.
I mean, I think this is a game where there was a strict path that you needed to walk here and you didn't. You needed to be able to run the football and you need to be able to win the turnover battle. You lost the turnover battle very early, and then that prevented you from ever running the football because you went down very early. And that continues to be a theme in the Steelers playoff. I know a lot of people are going to point to the defense, but you look at the last four playoff losses, 49 combined points and points off turnovers in these games. That's a huge part of this. You go to this game and unforced errors too. Like you're talking about George Pickens, an easy 9-yard, well-developed route in a good call gets the Steelers a chance to move the ball on their second drive of the game. And then he just fumbles it in a key situation. Pat Freiermuth fumbling it on the next drive, and almost costing the Steelers even more. And then Mason Rudolph getting to the red zone, second and goal, and he forces a bad pass in a situation he didn't need to, where he could have just kind of thrown that away and lived for the next play. And you look at those two moments, those buried the Steelers early. And in the second half of the game, you can see, or even in the final like 4 minutes of the first half, and then the second half of the game, you could see the Steelers were able to go back and forth with the Bills if they weren't turning the ball over. Even if they don't necessarily win the turnover battle, they just don't lose it by two. That's a much better football game. If Mason Rudolph even flips that from being an interception for the Bills to a field goal for the Steelers, that's a 10-point swing in a game that they lost by 14, and you're talking about a much better course of the game for the rest of the game. And that, I think that's the bottom line, is that when you got into that hole, you couldn't lean on that run game. That's where a big thing comes after the Steelers, is that they never got to play their style of football. I do think Mason Rudolph deserves a ton of credit for hanging in this game and sticking it out. I think he showed a lot of guts in the way that he performed. But I also think that this was a game where you needed to walk a specific path to beat a team like the Bills. And from the jump, you did not walk it.
Chris, I want to get your thoughts on the quarterback situation. I was talking to Paul a little bit about whether it changed the trajectory of the offseason one way or the other for you in terms of what they do with bringing Mason Rudolph back, having him compete with Kenny Pickett, maybe look outside the organization. Paul's been saying all season, he think, or at least the last month or so, that it's going to be Kenny Pickett's job, and nothing he saw tonight changed that. Where do you think they go from here at quarterback?
I think that here's what's going to happen. Mason Rudolph is going to test free agency. He's going to want a chance to be able to say, hey, you know, did anyone like what I did in the last three games of the season? And did anyone like at least the effort that I gave in a playoff environment? And I think that the conversation is going to be different this time around for him in free agency, because he got no offers in free agency this year. And he even said, you know, to us in one of the post game sessions we had with him, I think it was after the Bengals game, where he admitted, like, I was considering taking up commercial real estate after this season. And so I think he's in a better situation than that. But I'm not sure if a team's going to give him a big starting quarterback contract. The question will be, does he get a big backup quarterback contract? Does he get the kind of deal the Steelers gave Mitch Trubisky when they extended him last year? If they give him that, I could totally see the Steelers not being able to keep him there, because, you know, I think that they're a team that has a lot of things to build. And you're talking about maybe anywhere from $5 to $8 million for a backup quarterback. That's not easy money when you're trying to fix a lot of things. The team that's going to need a new center, they're going to need a new offensive tackle to pair with Broderick Jones, probably going to need more help on the defensive line, probably going to need maybe another safety or a cornerback or another linebacker, if they, depending on what they do with Quan Alexander, because with his 1-year deal, they're going to need to answer several different things this offseason. And backup quarterback may be, you know, the tough season. But there's also the question, I know some people are asking, what about Mason as the starting quarterback? You know, I think if you're able to afford to bring him back, you go into this training camp and you say, all right, Kenny, Mason, we'll give you both an even ground to fight for this job and to prove who should be the starter. I think that's a fair approach, but I also don't think it should be out of the consideration that the Steelers look in the NFL draft for talent this year. And I'm not saying a first-round pick, because I'm not sure if they'll get the pure first-round graded guys where they'll be drafting. I'm not sure what their draft position is right now, but I'd assume in like the low 20s. If you're sitting there in the second or third round and maybe like Michael Penix has fallen to you, that I wouldn't draft Penix in the first round, second or third. I might consider that to give yourself another young blooded quarterback into your offense where you could, you know, maybe develop them. And again, all you ever need to do with quarterback is hit one time. And if you hit one time, you get your franchise guy, you're good for the next 10 to 15 years. That's what the Steelers are looking for right now. If you can afford to keep Mason Rudolph, keep him, bring him back, and then draft a rookie. And then you have the vet with Kenny Pickett, and you have a rookie who can learn behind both of them. And it could be an interesting quarterback room next year. But if they can afford to bring back Mason Rudolph, I'd say bring him back, cut Mitch Trubisky, and then bring in another, you know, rookie quarterback to work with those two.
Trying to wind the show down here. I want to get both of your thoughts on, you know, what is this season in context? Was it a success, modest failure, major success? I think I'd consider it a modest failure. I think you lost games that you shouldn't have, that you could have avoided playing a team like Buffalo tonight that, you know, I think has been one of the best teams in the NFL over the second half of the season to get themselves to this point. I think they're rolling. I think it was a tough assignment. I think I picked the Steelers to basically lose by what they did tonight. But you know, so that's the context of which I'm going to say modest failure. Am I surprised they lost to this team tonight? No. Did you have chances to get out of this game? Yes. But Chris, what are your thoughts on the season as a whole now that it is over?
I think that this is a season. Oh, sorry. There's two Chris's.
Oh, yeah. There are two Chris's here. Chris Dell first, then I'll get to you, Chris.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, coming from somebody like myself who actually grew up a Cincinnati Bengals fan, I think we had about 6 or 7 years in a row in the 2000s where we made the playoffs in the first round and we lost. And it was like, well, they keep making the playoffs. They keep going, what was it at the time, 8-8 or 9-7. And personally, for me, I wanted to see what it would be like if Marvin Lewis was gone, if Andy Dalton wasn't the quarterback anymore, because in my opinion, as a lifelong sports fan, no matter what team it is, I either want my team to be competing, legitimately competing for a Super Bowl championship or at least a championship appearance, conference championship appearance, and not a first-round exit, because you're kind of stuck in that weird middle ground there where it's like, well, maybe we should just tank and get better for a Super Bowl run and a real Super Bowl run in a couple of years. And I think that's where most Steelers fans believe that they are right now. Great draft picks they made on the defensive end. Like Chris said, it's all about – the quarterback situation and what can they do. I mean, there's some veterans that are going to hit the free agent market this season as well. I know the Steelers haven't really gone that way in the past, but that's the biggest question mark to me is I think that, you know, Paul talked about in his last column at postaskgazette.com is how much power are they going to give Mike Tomlin if he's back next year? I think that's got to be a lot less in terms of the personnel, the coaching, the talent, et cetera, and the scouting, because changes need to be made. So that to me is what I want to see is, yeah, I mean, I don't think many Steelers fans are going to be excited about a Pickett-Rudolph battle. And can they at least make that mix a little more exciting, assuming Tomlin is the head coach going into the 2024 regular season?
Chris Carter.
I never believe in tanking. That's how you become the Bengals for 30 years is you tank. There's occasionally the once in a lifetime story where you get Burrow and Chase and it works out for 2 years, you make the playoffs. You know, but there's a lot more cases where teams in a franchise has fallen into oblivion for a decade. You know, look at the Rams, you know, for a decade before they even got to the coaches, before they got to Sean McVay. I think that there's a lot of examples why you don't, you know, effectively try to tank. I think the Steelers, they showed, I mean, that was a team that, again, you don't turn the ball over in a game where you're missing the best defensive player in football. You're hanging there with one of the best teams there in the Bills. I think that's a key element that shouldn't be overlooked in this game. And with this team, this is a team that, again, I think they found their feet too late in the season with their offense. And that was a key element of this. But I think whatever they want to do with the offense moving forward, they need to have a strict plan. They need to go get an offensive coordinator that they commit to. And that's not, you know, experimenting. This isn't experiment. This isn't a guy who's done it before. or this is a guy who hasn't done it before and is figuring things out. They need a guy who knows how to work an NFL quarterback room, knows how to work with an NFL quarterback, and can run that room efficiently. And if they get that guy, I think that they can put themselves in an offense where, if as long as you get game manager level quarterback play, that team with a better offensive line, they have to get a better center. They have to get a tackle that pairs better with Broderick Jones. I think that with a competent quarterback who gets you, you know, a slightly above average play, you know, and of course you'd love great play. That'd be awesome. But with the way this team is constructed, that can win you a lot of football games. Heck, they won a lot of football games this year with the play that they had. And I think that that's where I think that this season is at. And yeah, sure, you're not going to be, you know, blown out of your mind by Mason Ruff and Kenny Pickett as a quarterback battle per se. But if you can, again, get sturdy play, if you get the way that Mason Rudolph played in the last three games, just efficiency, not talking about big numbers, just, hey, don't turn the ball over, take what's there, let the playmakers do the rest of the work, and your defense is healthy, this team could do a lot of damage. I think that's where they were hoping to be. They didn't get that at the end of the season. You know, you're, again, missing the best player on the defensive side of the ball in football and TJ Watt. They didn't create enough turnovers in that game. That was something they needed to do against the Bills, and they didn't. And then they turned the ball over themselves. I think those are all things that played into how the season ended. But they need to figure out what their plan is moving forward with the quarterback of the offense. That starts with finding a new offensive coordinator. And I think that continues with figuring out what's the plan with Mason Rudolph, is if you could bring him back as a number two. Because if you can't, I don't think you can even bring back Mitch Trubisky as the number two, even if Mason Rudolph's gone. I think you have to go and find two new quarterbacks, because the way Mitch Trubisky looked at the end of the season was just abysmal. You cannot. I don't think there's any way you can bring him back at this point. But Kenny Pickett, you know, you have under contract. Make sure you have two other guys that can compete there. And have an offensive system that actually functions next year. I think they showed at the end of the season, when they have just a simple functioning offense, an efficient offense, they can be a tough team to beat. And that's what they need to have. I think that's got to be the priority as soon as this offseason starts. And, of course, the big question, you know, Mike Tomlin walking off the podium when asked if he's going to be back next season, because he just was not going to answer that question, obviously, in that status of the game. Or, you know, the post-game press conference. But, you know, that's a big question, too. Does he come back? You know, some people are saying he might want out. Whenever I talk to Mike Tomlin or hear Mike Tomlin talk or hear people talk about interacting with Mike Tomlin, the guy lives, breathes, and eats football. And he's talking about how he's planning things for the future for the Steelers. I'm not so sure that he's actually – I'm not sure if he's actually, you know, thinking about going anywhere. I don't think the Rooneys are going to get rid of him. If he does – that's going to be his choice. If Mike Tomlin does leave, that's going to be his choice. I'm not 100% sure that he'd do that right now. I think that Mike Tomlin's going to be around for still some time, as long as he wants to be.
Going to get you guys out of here on this. This is what, the fifth playoff game in a row. I don't even know what the list is, but this defense that the Steelers have invested a lot in comes up short again, gives up 30 plus. What is the shelf life of this defense being the centerpiece of this team and being the way they build everything else around it, including the offense? Cam Hayward's getting old. I don't think he's the game wrecker, because he was battling injuries. T.J. Watt battles injuries. Minkah Fitzpatrick is – I'm not going to say he's getting up there. I think he's still got some good years left in him. But listen, this has been a core trio since 2019 now. You've gotten almost nothing from it. And any chance they've gotten in the playoffs – these guys have not there has not been a game where this defense has dominated the way that I think the Steelers are supposed to work in theory, where you do just enough on offense and the defense wins you games like they did in 2005 and 2008. Does there need to be any soul searching on what the identity of this team is with those three big guns on defense and where they go from here? I'll start with Chris Carter, and then we'll get to Chris Dell.
I mean, you certainly need to look at how you're finishing seasons and what's going on there. You know, I think you don't just glaze over it and just say, well, everything's bad all the time. I think you acknowledge that, like, you know, points off turnovers are a huge part of this. Like, you know, people are going to point to, well, they allowed 40 points to the Browns. Yeah, well, like 28 of that was from, you know, literally the offense handing the ball over to the Browns, literally the first play of the game, handing them 7 points, and then four interceptions after that. You know, the Jaguars game, a game where they handed them 14 points off of turnovers and then never scored. I think this is the biggest thing. The Steelers offense has not scored in a playoff game when down by a single possession or tied, you know, going back to the win over the Chiefs, where they won with 6 field goals and the defense did play a great game in that one. And that's their last playoff win. In fact, the only time the Steelers have scored when the game was tied or within a single possession is when the Steelers defense scored against the Chiefs to give them a playoff lead 2 years ago. I think a big thing with the defense is, one, you need to be healthy. The NFL is a game of attrition. I think, you know, Chris Dell can speak to as a Bengals guy, you know, that the Bengals team as constructed is better than what they finished, but when you build a team around certain guys, they're not available. You can't just magically make that up.
I guess that's my point, Chris. Like, considering how the availability of these guys, can you really say that you're sure you're going to have those three guys at this point in the season? Because I had that thought with the Penguins for a long time. Malkin, Crosby, Letang, they struggled to have those guys healthy at the same time. And had they not had that 16-17 window, I think you'd look at them and say, man, they were a great trio that was undone by injuries. It almost feels like this defense is getting to a similar place. I hear what you're saying, Chris, of, you know, if they're healthy, they have the potential to do X, Y, or Z. But, you know, how many times have we seen that in the last couple of years? And how long can you trust that, given that these guys are not, like, straight out of the draft anymore?
I mean, I think that TJ Watt has been relatively – I mean, he missed last season, then he got hurt. I mean, the injury that he suffered, that's not like a, oh, man, he's just not fit enough to finish an NFL season. He had a 300-pound dude fall into the back of his leg. Like, that's going to injure most people. I don't think that TJ Watt is just injury-prone. In fact, last year was the first year that he missed a big portion of the season. And again, it was from a freak accident of an injury. Minkah Fitzpatrick certainly looked banged up this year, and Cam Hayward's up there. I mean, Cam Hayward's my age; he's like 34. So, like, there's really legit questions there. And I think that needs to be part of the question moving forward. I think Keanu Benton showed good signs as a rookie, but like, they need tough dudes up front in the defensive line. If Cam Hayward can't get back to even playing at an above average level, because I think he was kind of slightly above average for when he got back healthy this year, that's going to be a big need. But I think it's tough to live off of, well, if our guys aren't ever healthy, we should just burn it down, because, you know, when again, it's like freak accidents. Because if that's the case, the Bengals should give up on Joe Burrow, because he's missed two seasons now. Like you can't build an organization that way. I do think that there's certainly concerns for it, and that's part of football. But again, it happens to a lot of teams. There's a lot of good teams out there that are suffering. You know, I look at the Dolphins. You know, are the Dolphins a team that should blow it up right now, because they were extremely hurt up and they lost at the same point of the season the Steelers did, and this was supposed to be their year and everything. I don't think you live with that. I think that you keep the key players that you know are with you moving forward. Watt, Fitzpatrick, you trust them. Hayward is a big question. Does he want to come back? If he does, what do you build around him with? That's a legit question, but I don't think you necessarily wipe it away or blow it up or say forget all these guys because you've been injured in some cases.
Just to be clear, I would not advocate for blowing it up. I just wonder how much do you invest in that side of the ball versus you know, offense, where maybe you could use another weapon or two. There were guys that were out there in free agency that they didn't chase because this was, you know, they were throwing all their chips in with some of these guys. I think there's just needs to be a bit of a reevaluation. I'm not proposing tanking. Listen, I've watched enough Pirates baseball to want Eddie tanking out of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it's just a question of how do you allocate your resources, because the Steelers do stick out, Chris Dell, in terms of how much money they spend on defense versus offense.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm not advocating for the Steelers to tank either. I think that at some point you want to say, hey, look, maybe we go 6-10 one year, we try hard, we get better draft picks. And I think the key you got to give them credit for is Omar Khan and the front office is round two, Keanu Benton. Chris mentioned that. Round four, Nick Herbig. You know, he's coming on as a possible X factor in the future too. So those are two guys out of this past rookie class. You add that to TJ Watt, you got to just continue to invest in defense through the draft and through free agency, because you look at some of the biggest holes to me this year is what happens next year if they're healthy, but turnover regression, defensive touchdown regression goes the other way towards the average in the league. Then some of those games where the defense won single-handedly, they don't get those wins like they did this past season. So again, I think it's quarterback and defense. You continue to invest. I don't know how much better of an offensive skill group you can get than the two running backs they have on the roster right now, Thunder and Lightning, between Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. They both had great games this season. Obviously, the trio of Pat Freiermuth, Deontay Johnson, and George Pickens, I think you're pretty set there. As long as you can add a little of excitement into the quarterback mix, and like Christopher said, that, you know, even the last couple games, they were playing very well on offense. So I think those things and sticking to the identity, a lot of people talk about the Steeler way. Again, I'll harp it back to that drive where they got down to the three. First and goal from the three, they run it with Najee Harris one time. Second and goal from the four, and they throw an interception. I mean, the Steeler way there is you're going to run it three straight times. You might even go for it on fourth down there. And I think if they get that touchdown, it's a completely different game, possibly going into the half 14-7 instead of falling down 21-0. So again, like, I think the pieces are there, but the defense, yes, it does have holes. I agree. Continue to invest through free agency and the draft, because those things have been working over the last year or two.
All right. Any final thoughts, Chris? I was going to let you have the last word before we start signing off here.
No, that's right. I agree with you, Chris. Like the interception, if you flip that into a touchdown, it's a whole different ball game. And I didn't have a problem with necessarily going to the air, in that option. But as Mason Rudolph, the one thing he had done very, very well was not make that mistake in the last three games. And he made that mistake. And that one mistake could have been the world of difference there. Like you said, instead if it's a 14-7 game instead of a 21-0 game, even if the rest of the game just plays out the way that it did, when they score that touchdown in the early part of the fourth quarter, that ties the game. And that changes everything about that. Defense isn't thinking about playing on its heels. Like, okay, we got to get one more stop so the offense can get the ball back. You're playing a little bit more aggressive. And also you would give the offense, if that happens, you can run the ball more as the game goes on. You can lean on the run. They couldn't do that in the second half much because they were playing catch up too much. And you could have maybe forced Josh Allen's hand to be a little bit more aggressive, which is what you want in this game. But when he's up 21-0 and the he was never in danger of losing his lead, why would he take risks in this game? There was one pass he threw that was risky all game, and it was a missed interception from Eric Rowe. They were able to make it work with the blocked kick on the next play. But I agree. The Steelers have pieces right now that they could seriously go forward with, but they need a direction on offense. Because I agree with you here again, Chris. If they cannot trust that the defense is going to keep carrying them, the defense has carried them now for basically three seasons. Like that's how they've won most of their games. If they can get a balanced offense and the defense can stay in the top 10, because they did finish in the top 10 this year in scoring, that can win you a lot more football games and get you a better situation getting into the playoffs. Maybe you can get you a home game in the playoffs. When was the last time that happened? 2017. So I think that's when the Steelers have pieces in place to make things happen, but they need a direction on offense. They need to figure out what their plan is at quarterback, and they need to fix the offensive line and figure out what they're doing. I do agree, Adam. There is an allocation of funds that needs to be figured out, because I think there's certainly some money on the defensive side of the ball that can be changed around. You need more money going to the key starters at key positions. You didn't have that with guys like Mitch Trubisky holding up some money, and guys like Larry Ogunjobi who was paid pretty well, but was not productive this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I'm saying, Chris. I'm not necessarily saying blow anything up, change the identity of the defense vastly. I'm just saying that at a certain point, this theory of the case does not appear to be working to me, which is we're going to go into the playoffs and we're going to rely on the defense as the thing that wins. We're going to expect to have to do just enough on offense. I think you need a team that's a little bit more balanced. We talk about balance all the time, and I think part of balance is just having better players. Guys, thank you so much for chatting. Just want to thank one more sponsor before we sign off here, Pitt Johnstown. It's a Pitt quality education, up close and personal learning. It's a top-ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News & World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres, easy access to the city center, shopping and dining, vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. I will be back tomorrow morning. Johnny Patrician will be joining me, former Penn State and Pitt player. He's going to have his insight. He was on The Final Word with Chris on Sunday night, so we're going to keep getting his great insights. Chris, you're going to be back on the North Shore Drive on Wednesday, I believe, correct?
Yes, Wednesday we will be back with a big show. I'm sure. I think Steelers locker room cleanout is probably around then, so we'll see what the plan is for that. But we'll have a lot of discussions once the guys are back from Buffalo, and some thoughts go heading into the early part of the off season.
Indeed, and then we're going to be. We've talked a little bit about the draft. It's about to be mock draft season. We'll be talking about NFL draft here before too long. It seems hard to believe, but Listen, that's the way the NFL goes these days. You kind of switch gears pretty quickly, so we'll be getting into some of that. Thanks for joining us all season. A great audience tonight. The Steelers postgame show was a great success this season. We're glad we did it. Chris Dell, any final thoughts? I give Chris Carter some final thoughts. Any last thoughts from you?
No, it's a pleasure joining you guys tonight. Like you said, a lot of exciting things to come in the draft and the offseason ahead. And we'll continue cranking out the content at postdasgazette.com. And I'll be continuing to do fantasy and prop betting towards the Super Bowl. So I'm excited about that and excited to do some mock drafts too in the spring.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll talk to you again beginning tomorrow morning.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.